Hi everyone, welcome back to 10 Things I Hate About an Outlander podcast. We're on to episode 20 now. Can't quite believe it. This week we are reviewing the last two episodes that were aired, A Practical Guide to Time Travel and Turning Points. We hope you enjoy this episode and please like, subscribe, comment on whatever app you're using to listen to this now, and also sorry for the late release. Hope you enjoy.
We all have our favourite shows, but there's always something that comes along that means you like it a little less. The technical term is the scrappy-doo effect. Two friends create a safe space to talk about their favourite show, Outlander, all the things they love about it and some of the things they hate. Although we all love Outlander, there are things we hate. Admit it, there's always something. So we've created a safe space, a space for all Outlander lovers to share their dark secrets, but mainly it's a space to share ours. Every week we'll discuss episodes, their themes, feminism, what we love, and every week we'll talk about something we hate. Roger. Yep, we hate him. But let's be clear, we don't hate Rick Rankin. We have a clear grasp on reality. So join us, gentle viewer. Join Sharon and Ruth, two England-based Outlander fans, as they discuss love, hate, and time travel.
Good evening, Sharon.
Hello.
Good evening, listeners. And I'm saying good evening because we had a nice message on Instagram with somebody telling us that they listen to us in the evening. It's very nice. So I feel seen and validated.
I like that people are paying attention. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Actually listening to the words coming out of our mouths.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
But yeah, hello everybody. We're back for episode 20, which is the last two episodes of season 7 as is.
Yeah,
we've gone into a break.
So we're right up to date now with I know we've already introduced the episode A Practical Guide to Time Travel and Turning Points. And yeah, halfway through season 7, obviously there was a break. I don't know how it works in the States, but here anyway, it probably is the same. There was a week break between episode 6 and 7, leaving us with a little cliffhanger, as it loves to do. I think it did it for the only other time I remember it being so dramatic was the A.A. Malcolm episode.
Yeah.
When we were like, she walks in and then there was a week that we had to wait.
Yeah,
and like everybody was like, no.
Yeah, that was the cruelest cliffhanger of all.
Cruel, so cruel. We'd waited like years and months for that.
Exactly.
But yeah, so we're kind of starting and finishing in very different places for these two episodes. But as season 7 has been, it's just been really fun and lots of things happening and in both present and past.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, lots to pick apart. Lots to pick apart. Where do we want to begin? I think that's the issue. Where do we want to begin? Do we want to begin in the 20th century or do we want to begin in the 18th century?
Should we begin? Yeah, because the last episode left with a very exciting and also going, what the fuck's going on with Roger? I know that didn't fit. Roger hit your man. What's his name?
Buck McKenzie, as we discover. Yeah. William McKenzie. Buck,
yeah,
as they call him. Buck.
And obviously we're trying to unpick that. But yeah, that was really exciting.
It was, and then, I agree.
And then you can just feel things ramping up in the 80s.
I thought
that was really good.
Let's stay in the 80s a bit. Yeah, because I think I've enjoyed that they've changed the actor for Buck McKenzie. I know it was a nice little nod and a wink to Graham McTavish in when he was like that sort of cameo. But I like the change of actor. I think the actor who is playing Buck McKenzie is really good.
I really enjoy him. I like how absolutely huge he seems compared to everybody else.
He's
I'm really enjoying that. just enormous.
Yeah, I don't know how Roger knocked him out, but yeah.
Exactly. The man is like a foot taller than him.
Huge.
So I'm enjoying that, but I also like the kind of journey they've gone on with him, because obviously he's the first person we've had who's come from the past, originally from the past into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of having that sort of through his eyes, and then kind of Bree and Roger having to reconcile like what he did in the past with who he is now and in the present. I've liked that. I'm liking the addition of William McKenzie.
Yeah, love it. Obviously they forgave him as quickly as they forgave Rob Cameron, just like boom.
They also, I think, stayed more suspicious of him than Rob Cameron, which obviously
worked
out in very badly in their favour.
Yeah.
But I like that the children, I like the scene with William McKenzie and the children where he's disappeared and then they find him in the caravan watching Blake 7. And I don't know, I'm intrigued whether Blake 7 was big in other countries, but it was when I was a kid, it was massive and I loved Blake 7. it was like a dark version of Star Trek.
I'm not going to lie, I had to Google it. So,
Blake 7.
It's really good.
So I liked that little
nod,
cultural reference. But I like the fact that he's sat there, he's having a conversation about astronauts with Jemmy, and Mandy is combing his beard with a toy comb.
It's very cute.
Just the whole tableau of it all. And I feel like that is the kind of, you're supposed to almost trust Jemmy and Mandy's response to him.
Yes, definitely. It's really nice. It's a really nice reflection of how they should be feeling. And I just thought the introduction to him and that kind of, it's also, like we've said in the last episode, throwing into the mix the time travel part of this show, which usually just kind of hovers very lightly in the background. Like you could, like when Highlander first started, you could almost talk about it and not mention the time travel at all because it was irrelevant.
Yeah.
The whole relevance was Jamie and Claire and that pull towards each other. And now it feels like, what are they gearing us up to? And also
it's very centered.
Yeah. And also like usually it's from what we've seen, everyone goes 200 years into the past and then they'll go back to where they were from. But like you say, we've never seen someone go 200 years into the future. So like you'd almost expect if he did find the stones, he would have gone back to like the 1500s or whatever. Yeah. And so why didn't he? So
yeah,
all of that is like, it's like, because he's not from the present. So why did he go forward, not back? So
yeah,
it's like,
does Roger asks him what he, or Bree, I can't remember who it was, asked him what he was thinking about.
Mm-hmm, Bree, when they're in the by the dam.
Yeah, to try and understand what got him to that point. So it I think it is interesting. And I like it sort of through his eyes. I also like the fact that he seems very chill about the 20th century.
He's just very relaxed with all of us.
Very chill about it all.
He's great, and I really enjoy his suspicion of Rob Cameron.
Me too.
It's really enjoyable. It's like like when he puts out his hand to shake his hand, it's like that's pretty much how Roger should have reacted when they were in school.
Yeah,
you know, just like, no, you're the scum of the earth, thanks very much. And he was only like glimpsing a part of his personality, and he still reacted in a way that we kind of wanted Roger to react.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it's a good introduction of a character that was like just like a moment from
two seasons ago.
Yeah.
And I just think he brings so much and he's really good. And, you know, he's like his little mini journey of understanding what's happening and reconciling himself with Roger and what he did to Roger and realizing that they're related. And and then, yeah, his reaction to Rob Cameron, I mean, obviously is quite rooted in a sort of sexist, you know, keep away from my woman type.
Yeah.
But equally, he is also like, he's a wrong'un, not just like because he's transgressing this boundary of speaking to another man's wife, but
yeah,
that sense of I'm reading you, you're not real, you're not honest.
Yeah.
So it is really, really good. And then
how
really quickly he is like, well, I'm gonna come with you in back to the past and I'm, you know, because you're family. And So he's great. And if anything bad happens to him, I'm smashing stuff. I'd be furious.
Yeah, it's really, that would be really upsetting because, yeah, like you say, because I know Roger does bring up about his year of death and he's like, do you want to know? And obviously now we don't know whether it is because he disappeared to the future and we know he goes back. I guess we're all...
But does he go back? Where does he go back to?
Where do they go back to? Like, I mean, we're assuming they're going back. Like, we also know that at the same time, Claire and Jamie have arrived in Scotland. So will they cross paths? What? Obviously, these are all really exciting stories that they wanted us to be excited about. It's like, okay, yes. You know, will Claire and Jamie cross paths with Jemmy? Trying to take him to America and and obviously Claire, it'll be unlikely Claire and Jamie would recognize Jemmy, but Jemmy will recognize them. Yeah. So like it's all this like, will it? Yeah. And then like, obviously then will, how are they going to get in touch with Roger to, to do that. But yeah, that was all like very, very exciting. And it was all very, very good stuff.
And I liked, I think that crossover is good. And I'm going to apologise, listeners, now because I'm going to start jumping all over in these two episodes. But I actually, I'm pleased that we're back in Scotland. I won't lie, I wasn't.
Yes.
I wasn't thinking, oh great, another big war campaign to work our way through. I mean, we might go back to that, but I won't lie, I'll be glad to not just be focusing on war.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, it was fine. But I have to say, I got very emotional when they pulled up in Scotland. And just the few glimpses that we've had of Scotland from Bree and Roger being there has just been, just from a landscape point of view, it's just been really nice. And just even meeting William McKenzie and just hearing more kind of Scottish characters. Yeah. And obviously, like, they're interacting more in Scotland, and so to see more of that, obviously we're desperate to see Lollybrook in the 18th century and all that. So I'm the same. I'm just really excited. And also, like, we're, you know, thinking about when they left Fraser's Ridge and how she's like, we'll be back here again. It's like, Claire, who cares? You're going back to Scotland. It's like, this is like where you're supposed to be. And then when they arrive, they're both so emotional. It's almost like they'd forgotten how much it meant to them. It's great.
Yeah. And I liked the bit that where Bree takes William to the dam to take your ancestor to work day. And they're looking at the dam and she says something about so much has changed. Oh, so things are so different for you. And then he looks up at the mountains and sort of reflects that, you know, not everything has changed. And he kind of, you know, like refers to the landscape like it's a character, like it's a person. And I thought, we've talked about that before about how like Scotland is a character in
the show.
And I liked that you know, he makes that nod to it, that it is a character in the people who live there's
lives as well. So I thought that was a really nice little scene where he's just kind of looking at this landscape, and then that makes him reflect that his family will be dead. It becomes quite weird, doesn't it? When you're in the future, of course they're dead, but that realization, because you only saw them 2 minutes before, sort of thing, and Bree having that, you know, that thing that she can kind of bond with him on, because obviously she's had that experience as well. I thought that was really good as well. That kind of, you know, you can go back, but in that moment, they are dead. So it's quite a strange kind of existential thing for the program to explore, I think.
And I think it's like, we're both quite, have a real grow, I'm using the Gaelic word, for Scotland. We, you know, you go back a lot on holiday and stuff, and looking at it in the 18th century, looking at it in the 20th century, and looking at like where it's filmed in like Glencoe and around like the Cairngorms and things like that. I think you could stand there now even and look out on it and go, this is it. Kind of anyone who hasn't been to Scotland who's listening to the podcast, it is like the landscape that's in Outlander. It's very much like that, even to this day. Obviously,
I mean, that's because it is filmed in this day, though, Sharon.
No. Yes, I mean. Yes, I realise that. There is no CGI. That is it. That is literally it. And it's not like they've been filming at 2 a.m. and there's no one around. There literally is no one around. It is absolutely. Like so, for such a massive amount of land, there are very few people in comparison.
It's very
living
peaceful.
On it.
It's very peaceful.
Yeah, it's so peaceful. Definitely. So it's, I think, like, yeah, you're right. It definitely has that. The character of Scotland is big, which is nice to see.
Yeah, I liked that. Like, William brought that to that sort of moment, really. So I've enjoyed the introduction. I don't really like calling him Buck. I prefer William.
Then we get mixed up with the two Williams. But
true. Maybe that's why William forced him to call him Buck.
And obviously we have, do we want to go there with Phil Collins?
Oh, God.
Ruth has very strong feelings against it.
It's traumatic flashback then. I we talked about in the last episode how cheesy Bree and Roger are in terms of their sex life, and I just felt we went peak cheese.
It's cringe.
The dirty talk is cringe, but who signed off on Phil Collins in the air tonight as the song for the sex scene? Who signed off on that? Because that is peak cheesiness at the peak of all cheesiness. It has the actual line, "I can feel it coming in the air tonight." Are you on drugs when you chose that song? Are you? What is going on? Apart from the ick factor, which, yes, it does provoke a very strong reaction in me. One of the things that I think it really makes me think about is the difference in who kind of has agency in those sex scenes compared to Claire and Jamie. And I always find Bree a little bit passive, and that never seems to have changed.
Yeah, for sure. I find it really cringe when I was watching it. I do remember like curling in on myself when I first watched it, and then when I saw it coming on again. The only thing I will say, right, and I will say, she does look like they do look like they're enjoying themselves, and I thought they like they just, I find, I'm always still trying to figure out their chemistry, whether it's it's good or is it good or okay. But I thought, like, if it wasn't for Phil Collins in the background, I thought they were doing a good job of.
Yeah.
I think it was one of their best sex scenes they've done.
Yeah.
In all of the ones that we've had to kind of endure.
I think just saying that because you don't see Roger's hands as much.
I didn't see my notes. I wrote in the notes, I was like, what do I hate? And then you see his fingernails.
I didn't see that.
Oh my God. I was like, the music is so cringe. I could have done without seeing his nails. And you don't see them because they're like down on her bum or something. And then at the end, he puts them up and like holds her face. And you're like, so I'm like, yeah, no. So yeah, that kind
sorry.
Of like,
I didn't see that, no.
At the end of it, I'm like, but before that, I thought this is probably the most convincing one they've done.
Yeah. I would probably agree. I just think the music choice.
The music was so cringe.
Absolutely ridiculous. So embarrassing and cheesy.
Yeah, it really was.
Songs to choose.
They have like one of the best decades to choose from.
I mean, I lived through the 80s, so I wouldn't go that far. But
they have some great numbers to choose from.
We've got some good love songs and Phil
great
Collins.
Great ballads.
Phil Collins
great, like
one
power
of them.
Stuff.
So, but, yeah, so that was very naff.
Yeah, it was cringe. But yeah, it was. So the present day was really exciting. And obviously we do have Rob Cameron coming round for dinner as well, which was
can we talk etiquette for a minute? Let's talk etiquette. Coming round for your tea. Just for any listeners who aren't from the north of England, coming around for your tea, that's the meal that you have in the early evening. Mm-hmm. So I have never in the entire time of my entire life had somebody just rock up at my house and expect to be fed who wasn't under the age of about 10.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but also... Even my best friend wouldn't rock up. Whatever about a work colleague,
exactly. A work colleague who was bullying you 2 weeks before, and thinks he can bring a cheap bottle of Plonk and think that's perfect exchange for dinner, drinking all your whiskey.
Yeah, the arrogance.
Oh.
Yeah, allergic to him anyway. Can't stand him. Liking him less and less as the scenes go on. Definitely not a cultural thing to be able to just rock up and turn up for dinner. That's just unheard of in the UK altogether. So yeah, that was really irritating. Don't like him. And then I think I referenced this in the last episode when obviously then they figure out that they're talking, that what's actually happening. And I thought that scene with Mandy, it was just so, I thought it was a really good scene. It was just like really sweet. And it gave me, it did give me chills a bit. It was a good scene with Roger and Bree, the realization. I thought they did that really well.
Yeah.
And then like how quickly Buck William gets kind of caught up in that family. Like he's like immediately on the defense and like, we need to do something about it. Like he's very much like, I'm part of the family now. And I think that's where we kind of, we really get invested in him.
I liked the kind of slight kind of misdirection.
Oh, that we think it's
the
him.
The bad man.
The bad man.
And they think the bad man is Buck. We all know who the bad man is.
Yeah.
The person who comes to dinner without being invited.
Yeah, so that was all very quick and exciting and dramatic. And it was like when they get to the stones, it was, I think Roger picks up his scarf or something.
Yes.
And he finds his scarf and then he just kind of like looks to the side. And when I was watching this the first time, my husband was there and he literally looked up. He's like, Is that all he has to say? Like, he's just realized that his son has been taken 200 years in the past, and he just glances to the... Now, later on, we do see Roger react in a normal response to your child being taken from you, and he loses it. But I was just like, at the time, I was in my like Roger hatred, which doesn't go far, but it was very funny. I was like, yeah, that was a bit he could have done with a bit more emotion. But
I mean, I just think that, you know, all of this could have been avoided if Bree didn't forgive terrible behavior so quickly, and Roger mm-hmm. wasn't so spineless and so easily charmed.
Yeah. A bit more like William McKenzie.
Exactly.
Exactly. A bit more suspicious. But yeah, so we obviously end that last scene in the 20th century with her and Mandy on their own at the Stones, which is very sad and upsetting. And Bree, as always, showing kind of like her strong character, holding it together for everyone, and then kind of letting go when no one can see her, which is very much who she is. So,
but I mean, you know, if you really thought about it, who would you want going back to rescue?
Bree, like 100%.
No. Definitely, you know, so I feel like they've already made a mistake. I feel like that boy's not going to survive. I mean, it might do because William Buck McKenzie's gone back with him, so that might be the only thing, the saving grace.
I literally think that's the saving grace. Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, not much chance with Roger.
There's not a chance in hell. Yeah. No. Yeah, if William gets, like, you know, attacked within the first 10 minutes, Roger's, you know, he made it through once. That was pure luck.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So I think I feel like we've really focused in on the 20th century, but you know, there was a lot of hatred, a lot of focused hatred, obviously, on Roger and our new nemesis, Rob Cameron. But also a lot of love for the giant that is Buck McKenzie, and a little bit of you know, good child acting. A bit of good child acting, I do.
Yeah, they're good. They're good.
Jemmy and Mandy.
Yeah.
But whoever came up with the genius of having her combing his beard.
It was so good. I wonder if it was just happening or something, and then someone's like,
just
let's get
so
it in.
It's just so brilliant. whoever came up with that, or if it was just happening and went, let's film it. Perfect.
That was cute.
That was one of my favourite bits of the whole of this season 7. Was that scene. So it was really, really well done. Really nice.
The fact that it was a toy as well. It's just
exactly. It's not a grown-up's brush. It's a toy comb. It's a toy comb. They're watching Blake 7. They're talking about astronauts. It's amazing.
And it'll be really interesting to see this new edition and see how the dynamic is going to work when we... For the last half of the season, when we've got Bree on her own with Mandy, and you know, we've got Roger away, and obviously Buck, who we've just come to love. So yeah, that's going to be interesting. But yeah, it was a good, lots to say and do there, and obviously we're right in the pit of the war. Of course, it's never far from Jamie and Claire.
Obs, it's Outlander bingo. We got to have a war.
Gonna have a war, and Jamie has to get involved.
Yeah. So our cliffhanger, obviously, between these two episodes was, you know, Jamie being involved in the battle and being injured. And I really liked Claire, you know, like the connection between Claire, you know, that's the thing that they do really well, that really sort of personal, emotional, where she says, I don't want to lose you, and she says, I'll find you, and obviously she does, and then she's a complete badass with a sword.
Oh, this is so good. Yeah, like I mean, how many times does she have to watch that man go off to war? It's just like, I can't even imagine that kind of anxiety. It's,
I know,
just,
but, I mean, she could have stayed married to a university lecturer, couldn't she? So
exactly, yeah.
A lot, I mean, less danger involved sake. In that.
Yeah, she was absolutely brilliant, just like taking control of that cliffhanger. It was brilliant. Yeah, she's such a badass. And obviously we see Jamie and William, young William, have to face each other in battle as well, and see William's first kind of experience of war, which he speaks so proudly about, or, you know, with such, I don't know, kind of arrogance, I guess.
And I think that's, you know, I think actually that's really well captured, because, you know, there's, you know, if, you know, anybody who's done any kind of history stuff, that's a big thing that comes out of it, that kind of tradition of, like, officers in particular, you know, the the fact that, you know, we refer to wars as glorious and the glorious dead and all this kind of foolishness, and that, you know, that there was that kind of attitude right up until the First World War, really, and that properly beat it out of them all, where that, you know, where it was this perception that you were mightier than your opponents, and, you know, in some way they were like being disrespectful to, in any way, question your authority. So I do think they kind of show that journey of somebody who sees war as a unemotional thing, to then actually experiencing where, you know, his friend gets killed immediately, and, you know, he nearly dies, and then somebody who he really respects dies, and all that stuff that he will have been trained and taught is just kind of unraveling in front of him.
It goes from being like incredibly naive and like you say, the reality of it is so beyond anything I think, like, as human beings we can even begin to comprehend, like, the reality of what it is. And I think like William arrived at that being incredibly naive, but I think that's a bit unfair to William, because I think every young man that did join a war was incredibly naive, apart from experienced men like Jamie and all those senior officers. Then also you have this reality of these very privileged men joining the army then, and who have never been exposed to any sort of violence, where a lot of other men and everyone in that time, if any other kind of class of society, was exposed to violence potentially quite regularly. And so, like, you've got that massive, that even more kind of naivety of, like, what's actually happening and what it actually means to be in a conflict, because you've never had to fight over anything. Whereas some people didn't have the privilege of, like, of that, because they weren't given everything. They had to fight over it, and potentially quite physically. And in that time anyway. And so we see William kind of being exposed to a lot, and his, you know, his privilege has come up a bit.
And that disconnect as well, because I think you are supposed to see that through his eyes a little bit, of, you know, all the generals drinking champagne.
Yeah.
Where people don't have much food, and celebrating a victory when people, you know, are lying dead and unburied on a battlefield. And
exactly.
So starting to see that starkness, but equally still being very much, you know, indoctrinated into it. You know, at the end of the episode, he becomes a captain, and he's pleased about that. And what are we feeling about, how are we feeling about William being a central character?
Oh, do you know what? What I wrote down, I wrote, observation only, William has very little chemistry with anyone, is what my notes said. Like, as I went on, I was just like, God, he just can't form chemistry with anyone in the show. Like, it kind of doesn't matter who it is. And whether it's, yeah, whether it's Rachel, and you can kind of see them smiling with each other, but then when you see her with Ian, you're like, but that's kind of what chemistry is.
Yeah.
And then you, yeah, even with his mate, the guy that Hammond, like, that died.
Yeah, I was gutted that he died. I was thinking, you're quite good, you're quite funny, I want you to stay around. And then
you're a bit interesting.
No, we'll kill the interesting one and keep the wooden one.
So yeah, I think the one he probably he kind of plays quite well opposite is Katrina Balfe and him play quite well opposite each other. And because we see very little of him and Jamie anyway, but I always think that they bounce off each other quite well. But yeah, I mean, yeah, we're seeing, I think he's playing well into the storyline with Jamie, and obviously Jamie's very, you know, conflicted with him being on the opposite side of his of the war to his son. And that scene with the hat was very good, I thought, where he shoots
the scene
his
with
hat
the
off.
Was good, yeah.
Yeah.
There's three sides to a triangle at the moment. Mm. I'm one of those sides is very wibbly wobbly.
Just a squiggly
just
line.
A squiggly line.
On both sides.
Whereas you know, that scene with, you know, well, I mean, they're both good anyway on their own, but that scene with Rachel and Ian
was so good.
Hot.
Very hot. Very hot. Very sexy. Something very innocent about it at the same time. I just thought they captured it so well.
Great.
It was literally like they couldn't help themselves. It was so good. And I just thought, like, I loved the way, like, she hits him, but then she's like going in for more. Yeah. Like, she's like, kiss me again.
Yeah, and
it was just so good. And him just constantly in that agony and pain. It's, which is just so upsetting.
I mean, he's a really good actor.
Yeah.
He's a great. Really good actor, is John Bell. And it's good. It's nice to I always enjoy any scenes. I mean, he's had a couple of scenes where he's just been like, you are so cool. Where he just like appears when the British deserter is walking through the woods, and he just appears and he says something like, and what's your story? Or something. It's just like, so cool. So yeah, I really like Ian, and him and Rachel are really, really good. I mean, that scene was great, but just generally they're really great together. So
yeah.
I worry that we're in some way supposed to believe that she is drawn to William in the same way.
Yeah. I just feel like it's not reciprocal. I think he's drawn to her, but
yeah,
she's just clearly very much. And yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah. We like you say, we don't like to criticize anyone's acting skills, but I don't think he's got the range. I think they would have been a really like with John Bell, I think would have been a really good, and with Ian's character, what they could have done with William, especially given the privilege of his upbringing and balancing that reality and being true to that reality with just a bit more humor and ability to be a bit more like, I think they could have brought like something extra rather than this rigid character like all the way through. And if they had just, if he was able to deliver that, like something else, and maybe it's the right, maybe it's the writing, I don't know, but like, essentially, we're just missing something.
Yeah, we are.
And Jamie's got, like, Jamie can be very funny, and Lord John can be very funny, and I think just a bit of a softer edge or something to his character would have brought something more. And it's just not. I feel like we're eight episodes. Is it eight episodes in? Are we eight?
Yeah,
or six. Yeah, eight. And I'm still going, how many more do I have to wait?
Yeah, I agree. I feel a bit disappointed. But I feel like the Ian stuff has been really good, mm-hmm. and the Ian and Rachel stuff has been good. And then, like, you know, her kind of seeking counsel from her brother about what to do. And obviously,
yeah,
for them, he wouldn't, you know, Ian wouldn't be accepted by the Quakers because he is violent and so I think that was I thought that was really interesting. But then I thought, obviously, always delighted to have a bit of Rollo action, multiple Rollo actions. But
Rollo comes up a lot. I love, like, when Claire is like pushing him away from her
from goose fight. Something like that. But
it's cute.
I think the only thing that I'm still having a problem with is Mr. Bug as a villain, as this kind of almost pantomime villain.
It is so funny.
It's just a bit weird.
I just kind of feel like it's you, Mr. Bug, against Ian.
Exactly, but he's not going up against Ian, is he? He's going up. He's gonna do a sneak attack of trying to kill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's waiting for her to, like,
yeah. But,
exactly.
But still not. I still just don't like feel him as a villain, as it were.
No.
I don't either.
I just find him
particularly threatening, I think.
No, the only thing I find, like, stressful is the idea that, so, like, obviously it's not that I find him threatening, but it's like where the storyline is going to bring us with her.
Yeah.
And that's where we're scared, because we're just can someone give Ian a fucking break, please?
Yeah, exactly.
Have something for this poor man.
Exactly. I'm sorry, so but we're expected to feel sorry for Roger all the time. And Ian gets nothing. Let's give him a bit of peace, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
A little bit of happiness.
Yeah. And we're also obviously left with this feeling of, like, as this half season comes to a close, of not only, like, this past and present Scotland stuff, but also what is this hang, like, how long will Ian stay in Scotland? And I imagine they'll probably write to each other, and with that in mind, will Rachel end up going to Scotland? And like that, like you say about Denzel, I find him very sweet in the sense that, like, he's very, like, I love the way they are so close. It's so nice to see an honest relationship between siblings. I know we get that from Jenny and Jamie a bit, but they can still kind of deceive each other a little. Well, he can deceive her and a bit. But I liked that. It was surprising to me that she would admit to him about something that potentially, for a woman who wasn't married, I don't, you know, it's like, oh, that was a bit scandalous that they kissed. And, you know, it was really nice to see that, them just having a conversation and being comfortable with each other. Really sweet.
And that he wasn't saying, I don't approve. He was saying
our
community wouldn't accept him. I like their relationship as siblings.
Yeah, it's really nice. Like, I don't want to see them apart, but then I want to see Rachel and Ian together, but they're in different countries. So it left a really good, obviously ominous ending with Mr. Bug rocking up on the football.
Twirling his mustache.
So they're like, it's like, how many states did you have to walk through to stumble upon Rachel and Rollo?
Exactly. Again. I just happened to be walking down this road that you're on in this enormous country, and I didn't know you were here.
And I stumbled upon a husky or a hound or whatever he is that looks like Rollo. Oh, it must be Rollo.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all like, ooh, you know, but yeah, I think I tried to write ooh in my notes. But yeah, it was interesting. And then we kind of come to this ending in a really interesting scene at the end with Colonel Daniel Morgan, the Welsh rifler guy, taking off his top, which was really, really interesting. And Claire, I love the way Claire like watches Jamie from behind, just checking in on him to see if he's okay. But yeah, that was really interesting and obviously emotional. That, you know, Dougal used to use Jamie to rile all the Jacobites up to get money and rile them up for obviously what was an incoming war. But you know, Colonel Morgan is doing the same thing with getting everyone just
but like it being his choice to do it, whereas Jamie didn't have that agency. But yeah, sort of creating that connection between him and Jamie, and I think Jamie refers to them as like kindred spirits or something like that.
It was like spirit in skin as well or something, he says.
Flesh,
that's it, in flesh.
So you know that there's something there that connects them. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting scene, and I wonder if there's something about that will draw them back to America.
Well, this is it, and this is what I was thinking the whole way through about all these relationships, like with Rachel and Ian, with Captain, you know, Colonel Morgan and Jamie, and with Denzel and Claire, and I was just like, well, why? Yeah, what's the connection? So I think it's really, it's going to be really interesting to see how it all pans.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really keeping me kind of on my toes and going, what's coming up?
Yeah, I agree.
So it's exciting. Like, and I think we brought this up the last time, but we know before the cast know, or the characters know, that they can't change history, and we see this with Benedict Arnold as well being introduced. It's like Claire
I think there was a couple of things where Claire seems to be hinting at essentially destiny, like history is predetermined and you can't change it. So like I think when she's talking to Ian, when Jamie's hand is recovering, and she said something like, maybe he's supposed to be here or something like that. Maybe he's supposed to be in the war. And then, like when she's reflecting on Benedict Arnold. But I thought Benedict Arnold was an interesting character because obviously he is the most famous traitor pretty much in history. You know, as she said, his name is synonymous with betrayal. But he's presented as being honourable and respected and poorly treated. And it's this idea that him not being shown respect is that kind of drip, drip, drip for him of what pushes him towards betraying his country. But I thought it was quite a sympathetic portrayal for somebody who is seen as being a great betrayer for the United States.
Agreed.
So I thought that was good, and I really enjoyed his performance, and I really enjoyed his and Claire's interactions. I always quite enjoy it where Claire, and Jamie to some degree, where he got that chance to, but where she has those conversations with people, and it's like there's an equity that, you know, they're not kind of going, oh, I won't have this conversation because you're a woman or any of that. It's, you know, they're interested in her because she is clever and articulate, and she's interested in them for the same reason. And I just thought that was a really nice little bit with those two.
Yeah, it was a nice conversation. I agree. We're almost, when you're, what, before you find out who it is, you're almost like, ooh,
Yeah, exactly. Where's this gonna bring You're us? Drawn in by him, aren't you?
Yeah,
absolutely.
For sure.
That was a very nice charming kind of pull back and reveal. For him. Yeah.
And like you say, it wouldn't be a war unless Jamie was getting a limb repaired.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the man's got more scars.
Limb repaired, and then obviously he goes to see General Fraser.
Yeah.
To see him off.
And that made me think of the scene where Claire in season one, where Claire is helping the man who's been like mortally wounded and she can't help him, and it's her and
Dougal, is it? When they do the hog thing.
Yeah. And it made me think of that scene where you're just kind of trying to ease that person in their like sort of last moments.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, at the beginning, I was a bit nervous. I was like, oh, they're going into, you know, what's going to happen? Are they going to get captured? You know, where is it going? But it's all very civilized and chilled out in the end.
And obviously was the thing that meant that they went back to Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. And and before he goes, he gets to meet William. I don't know. Yeah. I just find it a bit weird the way he doesn't make proper eye contact with him, but it's all just very sad for Jamie.
Paranoid.
Yeah.
That William in some way will see something. Oh, I really look himself. Like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you don't.
I mean, you look nothing like him. But, you know, I think sometimes I wonder if that's kind of going on of like, you know, I don't want you to have any kind of possible suspicion.
Yeah, true. And then they're obviously on the boat. Yeah, like you say, then they get their ticket to Scotland.
Yeah.
And they're out of the war. And they're on the boat. Jamie's getting seasick again, as per usual.
It's the gift that never stops giving, Jamie's seasickness. It's always good for a laugh.
It's always entertaining because he's just such a strong man. He's like constantly saving people. It's nice to see him in that vulnerable position is and quite entertaining.
Felled by motion sickness. Yeah. Tell you, it's like everybody has their kryptonite. And yeah. Jamie's is, you just have to put them on a waltzer or a roundabout and they'd be doomed.
Disarm him. Get a waltzer. Sit him on there.
Get him on that merry-go-round.
Take his legs. Like his hands.
But yeah, it's always so funny. And it was a very good writing, as you know, I'm assuming, by Diana Gabaldon for that to be his like weakness.
His weakness, it's funny. But and then they obviously come off the boat onto Scotland, which I found quite an emotional ending. I thought Sam Heughan did a really good job of portraying quite a lot of emotion for Jamie. It's only a couple of seconds, but I thought it did bring a tear to my eye, and the music was very emotional.
Yeah, in Gaelic. It was. And it, you know, it was a nice, you know, like half season break to sort of end on, you know, lots of questions unanswered. You know, we've still got Jemmy has gone into the past, but that ending of kind of optimism, really. They're back in Scotland. They're going to see their family that they haven't seen for goodness knows how long. So I thought it was a really nice, positive final sort of image, really.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's exciting to see what's to come, because it's been, three seasons since we've seen them there?
Yeah.
So it is interesting to see what's to come. And
or is it more than three seasons?
Is it four? Do they go in four? In three they went.
They go in three.
Yeah, it's and then we've got seasons, four, five, six. Yeah, God, more than that. Four, five, six, seven. And we have the crossover, obviously, of Roger and William Mack going back as well. So, yeah, lots of exciting things to come. Very, very exciting. I think, have we covered our things we hate yet?
I think we have. I think we did a big deep dive into the things we hate.
Yeah, obviously Rob turning up for dinner And I find it, and even within that, I just find Brie, that her like constantly like making jokes with him over dinner, I just find the whole thing even more annoying with that kind of as well.
I just don't think she would, I don't know. I just don't think she would be so forgiving. I just don't think she would. But then, you know, I don't know. But it would be interesting to see how it, you know, I'm sure people would tell us what it's like in the book, but I found it just like glossed over so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And I think the reason why we put so many of those points in the hate thing is that it just builds and builds on it. And you kind of get to the end of this half season and you're just like, I'm just really pissed off now.
Yeah.
The other thing I put in, things we hate, is can someone give William a fucking personality? But yeah, I think we talked about that. That was my hate. That was my hate.
Sorry, William lovers.
Yeah, I know. Bless him.
But no, I agree. I just don't. He's not. They've not fleshed him out very well. There's nothing drawing me to him. I'm not feeling William.
No. No. I'm wondering, and I'm really curious to see what happens with this cross the ocean stuff.
So we'll probably just have another person bumping into one another, like everybody keeps bumping into each other in America.
Just casually.
I'm wondering, does he get down the same deserted road as you both?
Not even a road, it's just like a fucking dent in a field. But I love the way they just like even your man like waiting out to capture them all in the last episode
with Denzel.
It's just like, I'm just casually, it's this road you're walking on. But I wonder, will like something happen where William gets injured or something and he has to go back to his home or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point actually. Yeah.
I wonder, possibly. Is that how they're gonna continue that? But so let's see what happens with them. It is very exciting. It's been such a great season so far. I'm really excited to see what's coming. Do we know when it's even starting again?
I mean, it's just said next year.
It's so, I mean,
that could mean January, but then it could equally mean April.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In an unspecified date in 2024.
Yeah, exactly.
They're really dragging this in, aren't they?
Big amount of time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, listeners, this is the end of our narrative episodes, as it were, but I'm sure we can pull a couple of specials out of the bag.
Yes, we will. We'll definitely do that. And in the meantime, please let us know what you'd like, if there's anything you would like us to hear about us. Listen to us talk about. Is there any subject that we haven't covered? We have a few ideas for an additional special. But yeah, it'd be good to hear if there's anything that someone would like us to tune in to. And if you've got, what's your opinion on William?
Tell us your opinion on William. Tell us your opinion on the love triangle. Are you happy that they're back in Scotland? We want to know.
Yes, please tell us. Please tell us everything. Send us your messages. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us. Like, subscribe. All the things on whatever platform you're on at the moment.
We appreciate every like and follower. It's joy and brings great pleasure to us.
Yes, it does. And we will hopefully see you in the next couple of weeks on this episode.
Take care. Thanks for listeners.